Blog Talk Radio.
Special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
And this is the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Blog Talk Radio live. And then later on, it will be provided through Anchor.fm and also through iTunes, Spotify, and Google Playlists. Also on Apple Podcasts, too. So you'll be able to listen to this show on demand whenever you want at a later time. But for now, we got a few things that we've got to cover. As we had like a very big fight card that happened over the course of Saturday night in the Barclays Center, and the host here was there live at the Barclays Center last night for that fight card. If you want to get in on the Boxing Talk, number to dial is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. One key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Like I said, it was there over in the Brooklyn area, at the Barclays Center for that fight card that happened. For those that didn't make it to the Barclays Center, you're able to watch it on Showtime. And pretty much back in the Manhattan area, just like it was for the last episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. This time, doing a review of the fight card that happened at the Barclays Center, which I'm sure that a lot of you were able to check out, and a lot of you were able to enjoy. For that, we're going to see if we could get into it and break it down here for a little bit. So this is what we got going down. So you had a few things that took place. I would say that you would had, you know, a pretty much, you had three fights that were on showcase on Showtime. Really don't necessarily have to break down one particular fight that was on Showtime. We don't have to. Really isn't that necessary. I will talk about it really quick, and she'll get into it right now. This was the co-feature of the Showtime card, and it had Yuridenis Ugas going up against Cesar Miguel Baranyo Nuevo. And my thing was, to this day, I don't know why they had placed this second or as a co-feature to this fight card. For those that are, you know, maybe in the know, the co-feature had been slated for the WBC super middleweight championship. As you know, the holder of that title is David Benavidez, but they weren't able to get that fight with Benavidez over on this card, so they had to end up doing something else. So what ended up happening is they placed Yordanis Ugas in a fight with Cesar Miguel Barrionuevo. Barrionuevo is there real quick. 34-3-2, coming from Argentina. Hit the majority of his career, pretty much all but one fight up to this point before he went to the Barclays Center, was over in, well, actually all but two fights were all in Argentina for facing Yordanis Ugas. And with Ugas, you have him, of course, a rising contender. They lose the decision to Emmanuel Robles, and then unanimous decision to Amir Imam in 2014. But he eventually moved up to the welterweight division and got wins over Thomas Lahren, Ray Robinson, and Jonathan the season before, going up against Jason Gabler in the ring. He was currently seated as the highest ranked contender to the IBF welterweight championship since you had, you know, Errol Spence Jr. in his last fight defeat Carlos Ocampo, who was the number one ranked contender. So Yordanis Ugas is now, you know, the highest ranked contender. He's still slated at number two. Number one is vacant, but he was slated at number two. And he kind of, see if he could solidify his place there at number one in welterweight. The IBF rankings at welterweight. So real quick, just wanted to get through this fight. Yordanis Ugas, Cesar Miguel Barrionuevo. Wasn't really much of a fight. I was there at the Barclays Center. It was pretty much like a snack break or, you know, food break for a lot of people. I was there for the whole 12 rounds, unfortunately. So that's what, you know, ended up happening. There you had Ugas end up getting the decision win to move to 23 wins and 3 losses there. So that's it. Real quick, real fast. Ugas over Barrionuevo. Now, just getting the caller in here live with the area code 513. What's going on with you?
What's going on, brother?
It was good with you.
Can you? I can't, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yeah, you was at the fight. I see. You enjoy yourself?
Yes, I did, brother. How you? Yeah, man. I was like out and about, you know, trying to cover the fights as much as I could. So, you know, that's pretty much what I could do there, as far as I know. But just wanted to, like I said, get through that whole thing with Yordanis Ugas and Cesar Miguel Barrionuevo. I said that it wasn't really slated to be a co-feature bout, but they didn't have David Benavidez able to fit in that slot for the co-feature. So they inserted Yordanis Ugas against Cesar Miguel Barrionuevo. So if you can, you could have some quick thoughts about that particular fight before I move into the heavyweight fight that was featured on the Showtime card.
Well, basically, you Ugas, correct? That's his name, Ugas.
Yeah. Ugas.
Right. That was a kind of a little boring fight. Why I say a little boring fight? He did his thing, but he wasn't even moving his head. They're standing there. You know, it was kind of, it wasn't exciting. It wasn't exciting like the heavyweight fight, you know what I mean? So it wasn't too exciting to me, but he got the victory, you know?
Yes, he did. He did get the victory. He was able to get the unanimous decision victory. And, you know, following the fight, you know, they had Tim Gray out there. They had the interpreter out there for Ugas. And so, you know, he's saying that he wants to, you know, go after the title holders in the welterweight division. But, I mean, going off that particular fight, that really didn't show people much at all. Like, he would be a serious threat to any of the title holders in the 147-pound division. What do you think his chances are with those top guys at 147 pounds?
He's going to bed. His head is standing right there in front of you. So if a moving target is standing in front of you, you're going to beat him all day long. And then his he's strong, but he ain't got that one power. He got 11 KOs. That's not enough power to knock somebody out. He could knock the guy out. So the top five guys, they'll destroy him. That should be Porter. That should be Porter first defense with him.
You see, Ugas being the pretty much a top contender or a voluntary for John Porter there.
Yeah, that'd be a good fight for Porter to get him ready for whoever.
Gotcha. Now, I'll break that down a little bit later on, but just wanted to get into that heavyweight fight that probably should have been the co-feature on Showtime, and that is Adam Kownacki against Charles Martin. You had Kownacki there undefeated in his professional career, going up against Charles Martin, Mr. I Walk This Earth Like a God, 25-1-1. Of course, his long loss to Anthony Joshua in 2016 for the IBF Heavyweight Championship. And you had this fight here, man, where a lot of people kind of expected Adam Kownacki to, you know, outwork, out-hustle, and frustrate Charles Martin up to the point where they were probably stopping. But it didn't necessarily get to that point. But he did have a good little closing to that fight between Kownacki and Martin. Kownacki was able to, like I said, be able to come forward, and, you know, just attack Martin. But Martin really couldn't do that much against Kownacki until the later rounds, where he was having a lot of success with the left hand and ended up leading into a good little back-and-forth scrap between Kownacki and Martin in those closing rounds. But, you know, even with that, Kownacki was able to get the unanimous decision win. He had, if I'm not mistaken, had three scores of 96-94. I didn't see where they were able to find four rounds for Charles Martin, but the judges found four rounds for Charles Martin. But still, Adam Kownacki moves to 18-0. They're at heavyweight, and kind of like Jason's claim to be in a top 10 heavyweight. And now we got to see what's next for Adam Kownacki in his professional career. What did you think when you were seeing that fight?
Well, in that fight, Martin should have been using his jab. Using his jab and thinking. He wasn't thinking. He was just standing there slugging with him. He shouldn't have been there toe-to-toe slugging with him. So if he would have actually won, Martin would have won if he would start using that jab in the first round. Because like I say, a sitting target. Adam was a sitting target now. He was standing there, but he was standing. You hit me, I hit you back. You know, that's the type of fighter I like him. I like him. That's my new fighter right there now. I like him. Why? He come at you. He don't look like he in shape, but he gonna beat you up. They need to groom him. I wouldn't put him in there with no top dog. Just groom him up, two or three little fights, you know, till he get 19-0, 18-0. Get two more fights in, 20-0. Fight.
Yep.
Huh?
Yeah, he's 18-0.
Okay, 18-0. So, yeah, like I say, get him till he's 20-0. Now, put him in a title. in the title to get Wilder. Let him fight Wilder. That'd be a good one. That will let him earn his way all the way up to fight Wilder. That'd be a great fight for that man. But Wilder knocked him out. And Wilder got that one power that he hit him with that right hand and walk away. Then Adam might start doing the stanky leg, you know, because that's how good Wilder is. But I like Adam. That was a good fight, though. That was a good fight. Martin showed heart, taking too many shots. They got to learn to move their head. They don't move. These fighters nowadays don't move their head for size quarter. They don't move their head.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. You really saw that in, you know, this particular fight between Kanaki and Martin. That was like a phone booth type of fight. Scrap it out. Keep throwing and throwing and throwing until, you know, seeing who, you know, goes down first. And there were times where it looked like, you know, Charles Martin was in trouble. Where he did, like, hold on to, you know, Adam Kanaki at times. But he was still able to, you know, get through the fight. But even with that, he still didn't come out as the victor. And like you said, didn't move his head and didn't use his jab. Real quick, wanted to get in another caller in here. Erico, if one thing was going on with you.
What about?
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. I hope you can hear me clearly because it's raining like crazy out here right now. But once again, just glad to talk about a great weekend of boxing.
Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt. Yeah, that's what happens when you're in the lightning capital of the world. You always get those rainstorms pretty much around this time. You know what I mean? So that's how it is. Yeah. Terrell, what did you think about that fight between Kanaki and Martin?
Yeah, I didn't get to see that last night. I didn't have time to watch that today, but I definitely read some good notes on it. And as well, just hearing you guys talk about the fight. So I definitely can't wait to ingest that probably tonight or tomorrow sometime. But I'm not really going to the details of that going forward. But kind of like what the previous caller stated, they would love to get him moved up a little bit more and get him in line for a title shot. I mean, but even in that regard, fighting Wilder or fighting Joshua, at this point, is mythical. At this point, you know, with these supposed negotiations going back and forth. But, I mean, but really, in summary, it's glad that Glowinaki got the win. So now he is, once again, like we said before in the show, just keep his name out there on a high level. Add his name to that top list of contenders that coming up here in the near future. So you look at Glowinaki, your Dillian Whites of the world, and even Joseph Parker's fight last off to Dillian White. So there's going to be a small group of guys in there that you're going to look at in consideration in the first couple of quarters of 2019. Hopefully we'll get a title shot once we see things come to fruition with Wilder and even Joshua in that note. So glad he got a win, and hopefully we'll see what's going on going forward.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Right there. See that, you had something to follow up with about the Kanaki Martin fight?
Nah.
Okay. Yeah, just was making sure that one thing you did say, you were like suggesting a Kanaki Wilder fight. I guess that would be a possibility, of course, over at the Barclays Center, as you did have in 2016. You know, Deontay Wilder going up against Archer Spilka there, which, you know, had a good Polish contingent in that particular fight card. I mean, I was there, and they were like a lot of them out there. I'm telling you, man, it was a lot of them. I could barely hear yourself out there. So they were able to, you know, later on down the line, possibly make that fight before, you know, finally the unification happens, then that would be something that would probably get, you know, good money into the gate for the Barclays Center right there. So that's something to look forward to. For those that are listening live on, currently the Blog Talk Radio and want to get in on the Boston Talk, call in at 347-237-5539. All right, now we'll get into the whole thing with the main event.
I got one for you before you jump in. My fault. Guess who Adam should fight? Big Baby Miller. That's all I wanted to say. Right there. You beat Big Baby Miller, you can go ahead and fight Wilder. But my fault. My bad.
That's another good suggestion. I mean, I saw Big Baby out there over at the Barclays Center watching the fight. So, he would be another guy that could be a possible opponent for Adam Konacki. After his fight with Thomas Adamek, that's coming up October 6th in the Wintrust Arena over in Chicago. So that could be another follow-up fight for Big Baby Miller.
Hey, Junior. Yeah. Hey, dude. Is it my eyes or is it I'm seeing something? Don't Big Baby Miller look like he just blowed up like a balloon, bunch of air? He look like muscles is all air.
Yeah, sometimes it looks like that, you know what I mean? And then he, basically tries to get into shape and everything, and it kind of like books up a little when it comes to fight time, you know what I mean? So I mean, I've stood like, next to him a few times, and he's a big dude. But when he was in his last fight, they had him listed at 302 pounds, but it wasn't like 302 pounds looking like Adam Konacki. It wasn't quite like that, So he has his ways of, balancing, food and working out and things like that. Possibly not to the level of one other caller that's on here, but kind of like, gets himself pretty much in good enough shape to be ready to go come fight time.
Right.
Yes. So, getting into the whole thing with the WBC Welterweight Championship, of course, vacated by Keith one-time Thurman, who was booed almost out of the arena every time they showed him on the big screen. At the Barclays Center, that had me cracking up. I don't know why, but it had me cracking up.
Say it again. I couldn't hear you. Say it again.
At the Barclays Center, when they went between rounds during the fights, and of course, you know how they show the superstars and everything. They had Chadwick Boseman out there. They had Phil Boomer Esiason out there. Of course, boxers, Jared Hurd, Adrian Broner, Tank Davis, Charlo, Robert East Jr. Yeah, every time they showed Keith Thurman, like it was like the whole crowd was booing. I thought that was pretty funny right there.
And Bonner. But they booed Bonner too.
Yeah, Broner. They booed Broner too. Yep, they did. And he left it all up too. But here in this fight between Danny Garcia and Sean Porter, for the vacant WBC welterweight championship. Of course, he had both guys be former world champions in the welterweight division with Danny Garcia having the WBC belt. Hold on just a sec. Danny Garcia with the WBC belt. You had Sean Porter, former IBF welterweight champion. So both of those guys wanted, a shot to become world champion once again, and this was like a highly anticipated fight. A lot of fans were looking forward to this fight. They thought it would be, a close little scrap, and it ended up being a close little scrap. You had, Danny Garcia pretty much had the early advantage in round one, connecting well with the combination to, Porter's head. Porter, eventually shook off that and, kind of like utilized his style a little bit in, rounds two and three. But what we saw after that was something that we really hadn't seen much from Sean Porter and over the course of his professional career, and that's him actually boxing Danny Garcia. Last week I said one of the keys that I was looking for in this fight was to see if Danny Garcia was going to be able to box Sean Porter. And what we saw last night was that Sean Porter boxed Danny Garcia. Even though he was a shorter guy, even though he had pretty much had the shorter reach, he fought like he was the one that controlled the range, controlled the distance, like he had the longer reach. And he had, you know, Danny Garcia reaching for him at times and having him getting caught with counters. Then, you know, he employed the attack to the body, which was very key in this fight for, you know, Sean Porter, is that, you know, he was able to score well in the body of Danny Garcia. Now, there were a couple of times when Danny Garcia kind of like, you know, stood there and kind of like looked for the counter. But, you know, Kenny Porter, you know, I think Kenny Porter kind of like told his son Sean, you got to look for those counters, number one, and then you got to look for that left hook, number two. And if you were noticing, you saw Sean Porter kind of like have his right hand up closer to his head, you know, being on the lookout for that left hook. So it just seemed like he studied Danny Garcia well over the course of the training for this fight. And it looked like he, you know, was having a little bit of the advantage of the fight. But I think that there were like a couple of rounds where he kind of like smacked off and gave Garcia the advantage. And, you know, about round nine, I personally had scored it 5-4 Sean Porter. But round 10 was, you know, very action-packed. It was very close. It was very tight that I couldn't even score round 10. So I was pretty much lost at that point. I didn't really know. And I felt that, you know, Danny Garcia probably would get the benefit of the doubt. I don't know why, but I just felt it. So when it got to the 12th round and, you know, both guys tried to, you know, finish it out strong, I was like, I didn't know for sure. Then, you know, they came with the scorecards. You know, they said 116-112 and then two scores of 115-113. And then they said the winner was Showtime Sean Porter. And I'm telling you, and Terrell knows this, I've told people for weeks that I felt that Sean Porter would be able to get the decision. But being there live, I just didn't know for sure. But once they announced that, I was like so happy that he was able to get it because he earned that fight. He worked to get that decision in that particular fight. So now you have the WBC welterweight champion, Sean Porter, giving Danny Garcia his second loss of his professional career. Now, you know, Stephen, I'll give you the floor. Try to get your thoughts on it, you know, right after the fight, but wasn't able to catch up with you. So I'm giving you the floor on this fight here.
Well, you said the new WBC welterweight champion, you missed out the other one. And the new WBC trainer's belt, man. His daddy got a belt now. See, that's the clue now.
Oh.
Both of them got belts, man. Go ahead and address that first, then I'll come back on. Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, for those that are listening in, okay, we had a new belt being introduced in from the WBC. It is the WBC trainer's belt. And it's, you know, awarded, you know, to trainers of guys that, you know, hold, you know, that high mark there with the WBC. So we saw Kenny Porter, the trainer and father of Sean Porter, be awarded the trainer's belt also while Sean Porter was awarded the WBC welterweight championship. Now, this idea was introduced by a certain person, and I want that person to talk about it right now. So,
Well, actually, I came up with the trainer's title. If the trainer win a belt, my fault. If the fighter win a belt, the trainer win a belt for the WBC. And they don't ever get recognized of their accomplishments, what they went through with the fighter for many years, from amateur to the pros. And it gave a new look, a new refreshed look to boxing by awarding the boxing trainer a recognition of what he, you know, been through with the fighter. I mean, in football, you got everybody get rings, even the water boy get rings. Baseball, everybody get rings. So I reached out to the president, you know, the WBC family, Mr. Mauricio Suleiman. You know, I thank him for actually bringing an idea to fruition. My idea, my name is Stephon Pryor. I'm the son of a legend, Aaron the Hawk Pryor. And my father is a Hall of Famer. So I'm honored that the WBC family actually, you know, like my idea, my concept. I'm actually on one of their committees real soon. So I was there at the fight. And I'm sitting there ringside at the fight. And I know I missed you, Junior. You know, you was up in Yen. I was down there up under the wings of the supervisor of the WBC. So I had to be up under his wings for, you know, to get the ropes, to see what goes on as being an official supervisor for the WBC. So I'm sitting there watching the fight. And I'm sitting there next to, you know, Sam Watts, one of the pioneers in PBC, one of the true legends. Sam Watts. I'm sitting next to him, and I'm seeing the fight. Remember this. Any boxer that be a boxer, it's in your gym shoes. It's in the shoes that you buy. You can look at people get old boxing shoes. They be flat, and they got that little slippery sole on the bottom. Then you got slippery stuff on the canvas like people advertise. It's slippery. Once it get wet, the slippery shoes you got on, you're going to be sliding. You're going to be flat-footed. So when Porter got ahead on them shoes, it had a lot of spring in it. And you can tell who was going to win right there, because when he was bouncing, it was like he was bouncing on a bed. Like, oh yeah. So when I'm looking at the fight, I give Garcia the first four rounds. But I give it, put like this. Garcia had five rounds. Porter came up with seven rounds in my decision. And I knew he was going to win that fight because he was in and out throwing punches. See, he wasn't on the gas from first round to third round. He wasn't on his gas, like, throwing a lot of punches, smothering them, all that. I told Sam with him, I said, watch in the fourth round. He's going to press, you know, the charge to him now. He's going to start going, you know, do it. You know what he do, the pressure. He mad at my father, throw a lot of punches. And he wasn't doing too much movement like he was doing when he was training with angles. I didn't see too many of them. He was moving his head, stepping away from Robert. I mean, I said Robert. Stepping away from Danny Garcia left hook. That was good what he was doing, moving his head and everything. That's good. Some of the fighters don't move their head. I'm seeing him fighting. I see he was getting kind of winded. You know, he was taking his time with his punches, but wouldn't put them together. See, he put them together at the end. I saw a combination. It was so sweet. They was going toe-to-toe. And the referee, I can't leave him out. The referee was so excited. He was like, oh, like he was getting 3D versions. Like, he was like, whoa, oh, like, you know, the bell about the ring, you know, when they tap that floor, that ring, clink, 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 you know, 30 seconds coming up, 10 seconds, I mean. He was into it. I say, wow. So as I'm looking at the fight, I'm going to sum it up. So as I'm looking at the fight at ringside, and Porter rallied. He rallied up in the 11th round. Garcia did come back, but Porter did rally on him real quick. And then the 12th round, well, that was it right there. So, you know, Garcia started slowing down. And you know, I know who's going to win anyway. You know what I mean? I knew who was going to win because Porter put in a lot of work. You know, a lot of work. And, he's very humble. You know, when you carry yourself, you always have something in store for you. That's not just fighters. We talking about people in life. So if you carry yourself with humbleness, with righteousness, nothing evil on your mind, everything going to come your way. You know what I mean? It has no other choice. The law of attraction got to appear in your atmosphere because you live in the righteous way. You know what I mean? So like I tell folks, heaven and hell ain't two different places. It's two different choices. So if you live righteous, watch this. Charles, I want to throw you off radar when I say about living righteous. Charlo's brothers, y'all millionaires. Why do y'all act like that? You know what I mean? My opinion. Why you don't got to act like that?
Hey, you don't know. We talk about the Charlos almost all the time. We basically call them amigos of boxing because they act the way that you're talking about. And we're like, y'all don't need to act like that. You know what I mean?
And remember, but that takes a whole CC. Some they got to get around on positive people because it'll mess you up. You know what I mean? While you boxing, remember they get hit in the head. Then you got attitude outside the ring. You waiting for a lawsuit to happen on them. You know what I mean? So them guys got to be real professional, not dealing with the public people. I saw that. I was at the top of the arena. I'm seeing arguing with fans. You don't argue with fans. You cussing, nigga this. You don't got to excuse my language. You don't got to do none of that. No. You know, but anyway, but the fight, back to the Porter and Daddy, that was a great fight. And it was my honor to give Kenny Porter the trainer title belt, the new trainer title belt. So Mark Breedley, he deserved one. So on the next, Deontay Wilder's next fight, if Wilder wins his fight and be successful, Mark Breedley will be the new WBC trainer belt. It's time is due for him because Wilder has 7 defenses in his heavyweight title. So now, come on now. We got to give Breland his trainer belt also, too. And we need to put more trainers on the belt, too. I don't want to stay on that subject too long about the belt. We need to put legendary trainers on the belt. If it's a trainer belt, I'm going to talk with the president about it. We need to put more trainers on the belt, like Roger Mayweather, Angelo Dundee, Emmanuel Stewart. If we can at least put 8 trainers, a trainer's belt. Then you have Jose Suleiman at the bottom. Then you have the fighter. I mean, my fault. You had a trainer on the belt, the current trainer on the belt. It makes sense. It'll get a buzz. But that's my idea and concept for the WBC. If I can think of this, y'all, whoever tuning in, y'all got the gift. Exercise your gift. It will work. But thank you for your time, brother. I know I miss you, and I wanted to, you know, come and holler at you, but,
yeah,
you know, we've got to fight. But, you know, I apologize for that. We'll see each other. Trust me, brother.
All right, no problem. No doubt right there. Good little input about, you know, the trainer's belt that you, you know, had the idea and, you know, wanted to have it put into fruition. So thank you very much for that. You did, you know, kind of like talk about that a little bit. When I did have a live before going over to the New York area. So I just wanted to expound on that here on this show so that people can listen into it and then get with you at a later time to reference to all of that. Real quick, 813, Brother Sherrill, are you here with us? If you can, put in your input about Sean Porter against Danny Garcia.
Hey, Jay, what's the other guy's name? Stephen?
Stephon.
Hey, Stephon. Hey, what's up? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. I would just say thanks for all the work that you do within the sport of boxing. And actually, I was able to catch you guys live earlier this week when you guys went on and left about different topics and everything. So once again, glad to hear you have your power on the show. Just definitely adds to the credibility of our show and what you guys doing the work out there on the front scenes of boxing. So I definitely appreciate all that you bring to the table. In terms of boxing, but in terms of the fight, Garcia Porter, I mean, I would say the one thing that dominated the fight for me is, quite simply put, Porter's aggression. That's what carried him throughout this fight, and kind of like when I speak about that, you guys know that Garcia pretty much had the advantage in the first few rounds, things like that. But at the same time, in a sense, I think around 4 or 5, in a sense like that, Porter, in a sense, woke up and just started to show that aggression, the same type of aggression that he showed throughout the fight for 12 rounds when he fought against Sterling back in 2016. And once again, I'll reference those fights again, Thurman Garcia, Thurman Porter, and just the differences between those fights. Like I said, when Thurman fought Porter, it was a hard fight the entire fight. And like I said, round 4, 5, 6, Porter definitely woke up and just started to show that aggression. And kind of one thing we said about last week, if Porter could refine some of his technique and not just throw wild all the time, come in with his head down, which he didn't necessarily do because, like I said, like Jay said, he definitely showed some more boxing this time, which we didn't expect to see. Because, you know, a lot of times when you see a fighter, they're going to be who they're going to be. You know, I'm trying to think of last year when we saw, who was it? Somebody that switched trainers at the last minute. And they're, I think it was Bradley, I think, that switched trainers. Or like, what, he's going to be?
Porter did fight Granados, you know, at one point. So I think it was the Granados fight. Maybe.
So with Porter, he definitely showed some refinement in his technique. He boxed on the outside and definitely brought his aggression. And that's what carried him throughout the fight. And whereas Garcia's style, as we know, is a more of a counter puncher. And, I mean, and what's funny, Garcia had many, many opportunities to light Porter up, to light him up. But he didn't do it. He's just relegated pretty much to simply counter punching. That's it. Bradley was either aggressive coming forward in the fight, you know. And like I said, Garcia definitely had his opportunities, but he didn't capitalize on that, and that's why we have the decision where we have now. And I'm Stephon, just like I said, same with you. I'm glad for Porter. This dude's a work hard dude, you know, nothing given to him. And even like last week we were talking about, Jay, if Porter won his fight, and which he did win his fight, going forward, it's not like he's gonna be a Mr. Popular. It's not like he's gonna be on the A side, and that. But you know what? But still, he's a dude that works hard, and you appreciate that. His father works hard as a trainer. We appreciate that. So now it's we have a lot of more clarity in the 147 class now with Porter with the WBC. You got Errol Spence over there with the on IBF and things like that, and Thurman still carrying the WBA, and of course with Crawford holding the WBO title. So now there's a lot more clarity. We've got names out there, Pacquiao, Broner, people like that. We still got your supporting characters, but we can have a lot more clarity, like to put a division on what we want to do. But now what's interesting now is the back and forth going between Crawford and Spence on Twitter. They're kind of going at each other, things like that. So, and even with Spence saying that he wants to fight the winner of the Garcia Porter, which now we know now is Porter. So now it's like, what's going to happen next? And what's going to get us those super fights within that division? And I think it's fair to say that the welterweight division is still the glory division of boxing right now, despite what we have at heavyweight. So that's definitely fair to say. It was a great fight, though.
Yeah, it was a great fight. And that, you know, something where, you know, we kind of saw, you know, two guys that were, you know, were put among the top five in the welterweight division. And, you know, they were very close as far as, like, you know, who would be the person that would come out the victor. And it was something where you kind of had one of those rare occasions where you saw two guys, you know, that are pretty much at the top of their game be able to perform at the top of their game. And it became, you know, at times a war of attrition, but it also, you know, became a war of strategy. And, you know, you had Kenny Porter. Looked like Kenny Porter was the better strategist than Angel Garcia was. And it showed there in the late stages of the fight, you know, where Sean Porter made his adjustments. He was able to give Danny Garcia different looks. He was able to work the body a lot and connect very well to the body on Danny Garcia. And like I was saying from the outset, was able to control the range like it was the taller fighter, because I'm telling you, there were multiple occasions where Danny Garcia missed either a jab or, you know, the left hook or something like that. And, you know, it was because he was too far apart. And Sean Porter tried to counter with the right hand, and he missed because he was too far back. If he was in range with those right hand counters, he would have really rocked Danny Garcia with those things. So he fought the smart fight. He fought, you know, pretty much the it was like almost perfect for a person of Sean Porter's caliber to, you know, fight a guy like Danny Garcia in order to get the win and get that WBC welterweight title. Now, you know, right after the decision came down. Sean Porter was basically saying, like, hey, he'll take on all comers. And, well, the IBF welterweight champion, Errol Spence Jr., stepped into the ring. And, you know, he said that, you know, Errol Spence said that, you know, he ain't scared to, you know, face anybody. And, you know, Porter was like, well, okay. I'm like, I'm right here. So what's going on? We can make this fight happen. I mean, just, you know, set it up, and we in there. We fight. Because, you know, Sean Porter is the type of guy that, you know, we haven't really seen that much of where, you know, he'll fight anybody in the welterweight division. It really doesn't, you know, matter, you know, what their status is. Sean Porter will fight them. So that, you know, that's what, you know, basically gathered from the aftermath of that. What are your thoughts about that potential Sean Porter versus Errol Spence Jr. matchup there, Stephon?
Well, Spence is too much for Porter. You know, why I say that, Spence is on another level. I call him a humbleness level, you know what I mean? And once you get on that humbleness level, anything in front of you, just seek and destroy it. You know what I mean? You know, you don't mean to, you know, hurt nobody. You just, you know, you just that, that's their job. You down me, I down you. That is the job. So that fight right there, I wouldn't rush into that. I rush into that spring. That'd be a good spring fight right there. A good spring, a 2019 spring, call it spring bling. You know, you get him, you get who else? You said Porter and Spence. You get him, whoever win that fight, they fight Keith Thurman. They Keith Thurman get a tune up. Then they fight Keith Thurman. Boom, them three belts came together. And now the boxing, Crawford's, he got to come. He got to come in. Regardless, they're on the ESPN, and they got to work together. It can be ESPN / Showtime pay-per-view. They all can work together. So this is the key, too. On my point on that, I like Spence. I like him. I like Porter, too. You know, both of them humble. So too humbleness, my fault. Ooh, that's going to be kind of wild right there. That's going to be wild right there. I think Garcia should fight Spence. Let Danny fight Spence. And after that, boom. Let Porter have a first title defense. And let Garcia fight for the IBF. If he win that, guess what? Porter and him have another rematch. So as always, you can do a lot of things with that. You know what I mean? But both of them got, like, as long as you stay in condition, supreme condition, superb condition, you cool. You might get a decision. You don't get hurt. Because your body is in shape. So them two guys clashing, that's a pay-per-view fight right there. Porter and Spence, they got to be a pay-per-view fight. Ain't it that? It had to.
Yeah. And, yeah, see if that,
yeah, it had to.
Hey, James.
Yeah. Yeah, Terrell.
One quick question for both you guys to consider. So we know pretty much at this point Spence is definitely at the top of 147. I was actually reading through some boxing threads this last few days, and someone within the thread posed a question: is Spence unbeatable? And because we've entertained now Spence possibly fighting the winner of Porter, we know that Mikey Garcia is trying to throw his name into the ring to fight Spence, things like that. But with that said, is Spence actually unbeatable at this point? And what type of style fighter will actually beat him?
Say it again.
What style can actually beat Spence?
A boxer. A boxer, Spence come at you. He moves his head too, but I always remember this, when you fighting, and I got something to tell you, Junior, too, you need to take this with you too, with doing your podcast and your what you do on Facebook too. I got an idea for you too, but I'm gonna hit you with that in a minute. But what style would be him? When a guy, remember this, when my father was fighting, he was fighting Alexis Aguilo, right? When he fought Alexis Aguilo, Lex was coming at him. He was coming at him. And my father can bang too. But my father said, no, I can't keep doing that. He'll beat me because that's what he likes to do, is slug with you. So he said, my father said, I had to move around. I had to box him now. I had to move around like Muhammad Ali in boxing. Move around. Combination. Boom, boom. Oh, get on them toes. Move around. That's how you beat them guys. I don't care who you is. If you do that, you're going to – that's what Porter was doing, bouncing, but he was taking pictures bouncing. He wasn't throwing them hands as he was bouncing in the first four rounds. He didn't do that. He was just bouncing, taking a picture like, no, no, you can't do that. Pose, just bounce, bounce, bounce. You get caught bouncing. You get what I'm saying? So a boxer will always – if he can box and slug, he got it. And then Spence, I ain't never seen Spence box. I think he's going to destroy you. Blah, blah, blah. Like I call it slugging. But if you can do the opposite when somebody's slugging and you start boxing him, he get confused. I don't care who you is. You know what I mean? Because remember, when spar partners come in, they don't come in there and bounce around, moving around. They come in there and slug with you, too. That's it. They don't do the opposite. So when you start doing the opposite of what another opponent is doing, he's slugging off in the box. Now, if he boxing, now you slug. You do the opposite. Oh, he's trying to box with me now. Oh, you know how to box? Oh, Junior know how to box now. Okay. Let me slug with Junior now. Now, Junior going to come back with a slug. Let me start about boxing. So it's a back-and-forth thing. Who can hold the posture long by boxing while other guy trying to slug and catch up with you? Remember, you can't hit a moving target. You get confused. You off balance. And it's back in the shoes. So,
right.
Oh, Junior, before I go, this is what people should start doing, man. For real, this will work. I see a lot of people get bad. They like bad publicity with these fighters, and their views sometimes go up. People, what about the good? What about the behind the scenes of the promoters been doing this for many years and trainers is positive? What are you doing in your community? Nobody's not talking about that. That's why you have politics and boxing, because you're gonna have. I hear you. Hello?
Nah, you keep going on that.
Oh, you need positive in the boxing, man, because some of the stuff people do, what them fighters do, it frustrates you. Like when I was like, man, y'all see what that child of them doing, how they acting? Why you worried about how they acting? What you going to do to try to help them? Because remember, it's a chemical in your brain that make you upset. And once that chemical start taking over your body has distress on it. And then when you got distress on it, of course you're going to act like that. You know what I'm saying? So we need more positive people. I'm not saying it ain't none out here. We just need to have you're going to have bad, then you got the good, right? So where the good at? Where the good interviews at? The good. What's the thing about? We ain't going to worry about what people think. How much they getting paid? We can't worry about what they getting paid. What about positive? How the family's doing? What they tell your kids doing? Nobody will talk about that. And that'll be a good looking boxing, and I bet your views will go up because you got a lot of good over bad.
Well, I mean, that's something that I could, you know, pretty much focus on for a few people. You know, for example, for the Russell family over in Maryland, they're in Capitol Heights, Maryland. You have, of course, Gary Russell Sr., Gary Russell Jr., you have Antoine, you have Antonio, you have pretty much the whole clan, Russell clan, that all of those brothers are positive. So that could be something right there to where, you know, I could probably set something up with them, you know, kind of like going by that theme. Now, before I add in another caller, I wanted to go in real quick about in reference to Terrell's question about Errol Spence Jr. Going off what, you know, Safar said, a boxer pretty much defeats Errol Spence Jr. in a sense. If you kind of looked at the fight between Errol Spence and Kell Brook was able to, you know, control the distance and try to control the jab to keep, you know, Errol Spence away from him. Because Errol Spence just comes at you, he just looks at you. It's not like he really leaps in before he works inside in the body. Yeah. So by keeping in the jab and then moving around, moving back, moving laterally, then you're having Errol Spence reset. And also, you may just have a jab, but you got to have something behind that to keep him honest. So you got to have something behind that right hand to keep Errol Spence honest while you do have that jab going down. Just wanted to get that in real quick. And I want to add in area code 646. What's going on with you?
JR, what's good, man? This is Matt. Man, oh, man, oh, man. You know,
hey, man, what's going on, man?
Rough weekend, man. roughly from, you know, I can't even say that I was disappointed in Danny Garcia's performance. All I can really say is Sean Porter was the better man. Sean Porter, he boxed better than I've ever seen him box his entire career. Like, he actually looked like a real boxer with a real strategy. He didn't dive in head first like I thought he would. He was actually feinting his way in, sometimes jabbing his way in. He changed up so many different things for Danny Garcia that I think Garcia didn't adjust to it until it was too late.
Yeah, it looked like, you know, at times Danny Garcia didn't know what to do with Porter's pursuit and his work to the body. There was a point to where he kind of like was very one-dimensional and looking for the counter, but, you know, Sean Porter was looking for Garcia to do something like that too, and so he kind of, you know, had his right hand up towards his face in order to block the, you know, that left hook of Danny Garcia's. And you just saw, like you're saying, Sean Porter being the busier fighter, working and connecting well in the body, and also employing the uppercut at different points of the fight that really, you know, affected Danny Garcia right there. So, I mean, those were kind of like the key things that had Sean Porter get the decision over Danny Garcia, which I would like to say once again that I called Sean Porter beat Danny Garcia by decision. I just want to add that in real quick.
You definitely called that. But I want to touch on something. I just started listening, and I was taking my little customary Sunday nap. But I was listening to you guys talking about Errol Spence. And, you know, I'm not really feeling the lack of respect that I feel you guys are showing Errol Spence Jr. All this talk about, oh, you know, a good boxer beats him. Listen, Errol Spence himself is a good boxer. And for anyone who thinks that he's not, you're just not watching close enough. I keep hearing you guys say that he just walks you down. He walks in. He doesn't have any, like, real technique. He looks at you and walks you in. I don't see that when he fights, you know? I see Errol Spence wearing his opponent down, not just walking in. He's throwing punches on his way in. It's not like he's just walking in to get close to you and punching. He's punching his way in. He's beating you up to the body. He's breaking you mentally because he's relentless with his pressure. And there is not one fighter in the welterweight division that can deal with that. That includes Terrence Crawford. You know, what we saw yesterday, shout out to Sean Porter, shout out to Danny Garcia, great. All that was all well and good. But what we saw yesterday was the beginning of the build-up to Crawford versus Spence. That's what yesterday was really all about to me. When I woke up this morning, I wasn't thinking about Porter versus Garcia. I was thinking about, it seems like Errol Spence Jr. is a bit tired of everyone else getting the big fight. You know, he had a little taste of the big fight when he fought Kell Brook in the UK, and I think he is dying to get the big fight again. That's why he's entertaining the prospect of fighting a Mikey Garcia, because he knows he's going to beat Mikey Garcia, yeah, but it's going to be a big event. And it seems to me Errol Spence wants to be part of these big boxing events. He wants to be a part of the fight that he thinks his talent deserves him to be a part of. So I think you're going to see Errol Spence. He's going to fight Mikey Garcia. Then he's going to fight Sean Porter. Then he's going to fight Keith Thurman. And then in the first quarter of 2020, I think you're going to see him and Terrence Crawford square off. That's just the way I see things going.
Yeah, I mean, we're eventually trying to build up to the, like saying, the biggest a fight that could be put together at welterweight, and that is Errol Spence versus Terrence Crawford. But I mean, the thing with Spence, I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, Spence doesn't have any boxing skill. That's not what we're saying. We're saying, you know, if anyone has the possibility of beating Errol Spence, what do they have to do in order to do it? And, you know, the things that I said are kind of like two key weapons or key, you know, factors in that opponent, you know, attempting to defeat Errol Spence. But you also, you know, have to have a very, very good trainer behind you, because Errol Spence has a very, very good trainer behind him.
The best trainer. The best trainer,
yeah,
in the world.
In Derrick James. So he's the best trainer. So I guess Derrick James should be the one that deserves that trainer's belt that Kenny Porter has right now.
He got one. He got one.
Oh, got one. Derrick James got one.
Yeah, he got his already. He got his. I made sure he got his already when Charlotte fought in was it California?
Yeah, in L.A.
When he fought in L.A. Yeah, he got one.
Yeah.
He got one. I got pictures of his too. Yep. Yeah, he good.
Okay,
I like him, Derrick James. I like Spence too. You know, my opinion. If you're a fighter, if you're a damn good boxer, yeah, you got opportunity. Remember, it only takes one punch, man.
Yeah, that's true. It only does take one punch. So that's what we got going down there in the welterweight division. Broke down what we could break down a reference to that card. But before we close out on that subject, I wanted to get Matt Brown's thoughts about one of his favorite fighters in Adam Kownacki.
Let's go. Defeating
Charles Martin by unanimous decision. Although it was a 6-4 score, which I didn't think it was 6-4. I couldn't find more than one round that Charles Martin won in that fight.
You know what's funny about that? It must have played out differently live than it did on TV, because you had the exact same scorecard that your favorite guy, Dan Rafio, had also. So from what I can tell, anyone that watched it on TV, like myself and many other fans, we had the fight 7-3 for Kownacki. And it seems like anyone that was in the building had it 9-1, which is very, very interesting. I thought that Kownacki easily won the first 6 rounds. I thought he lost rounds 7 and 8. He did good in round 9 to come back. And I edged Martin in round 10. To me, that was a damn good fight. I know I was speaking to you during the fight, and you said it was meh. But you're a hater. You know, it is what it is, man. You just hate whatever I like. That's what it is. You just hate whatever I think, you just go with the opposite. That was a damn good fight, JR. That was a damn good fight. Nice heavyweight scrap, nice and sloppy, throwing bombs at each other. These guys were fighting a phone booth fight the whole night in the heavyweight division. You don't see that at all. They combined to throw over 1,400 punches in the heavyweight division. They threw more punches than Porter and Garcia. So, like, these guys were going for it. Kownacki was going for it. Kownacki, as usual, showed a top shelf chin. Charles Martin showed a lot of heart. I think that he did win over a lot of fans yesterday. And I think Kownacki, as I've been saying, he's a top 10 heavyweight. He is the future of the division. I'm telling you that right now. You can quote me on it. This babyface assassin, This the Polish hammer, as I like to call him, he is going to be the man in the division. You know, I think you're going to see probably match up next year with a Louis Ortiz because, you know, Louis Ortiz is down with Al Heyman. It's going to be a lot of fights from this new Fox and Showtime deal that's going to get made. I think you're going to see Adam Kornacki. He's going to get pushed to the forefront because he does sell tickets. There was a lot of Polish fans inside that crowd yesterday. So they can't say he doesn't attract your audience. You put that boy in Chicago against somebody, he's going to sell some tickets. You put him in any city that has a good Polish population, he's going to sell tickets. So he's the future, man. I'm telling you. He is. He's a fun fighter. I'm not saying he's a great technical fighter, but he is such a fun fighter to watch. He should be everyone's favorite fighter besides the rooster guy that fought on the Golden Boy card that threw like 200 punches in a round. But this guy is great. I'm telling you. He's the future. I want to see him fight Big Baby Miller. That's what I want to see.
Well, if he's the future of the heavyweight division, we had another suggestion as a possible matchup for Adam Kownacki, and that is Deontay Wilder. So if he's going to be the future
of the
heavyweight division.
He's not ready for that.
You were talking about the future, man. He's got to be
Not the immediate future. He's the 3-4 years down the line future. He's not the immediate future. Right now, Deontay Wilder knocks out every single top 10 heavyweight in the world. Okay?
Except Joshua.
Oh, please. Especially, listen, Joshua is too stiff, too robotic. It's actually, if they ever fight, you and I, we're gonna put money on this, okay?
We're gonna put money,
and you know I don't usually bet, but we're gonna put money on this because I'm telling you, there is no way in hell that juiced up Anthony Joshua is gonna have anything to do with Deontay Wilder. I'm telling you. I'm telling you, guys, listen. But back to Kornacki, I'd love to see Kornacki fight Jarrell Miller. I think it would be a huge fight in Brooklyn. I think it would be an exciting fight in Brooklyn. I guess we're just going to have to see if Al Heyman and Eddie Hearn can do some business together.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, doesn't Al Heyman still advise Daniel Jacobs?
No.
He doesn't advise him anymore?
No, but you knew that already, JR. Come on, man. Now you're trying to be funny.
Hey, I'm just opening things up for the people.
You knew that already, man.
All right. So, moving on, we had, like, another card that did take place. This time at the Forum in Inglewood, California. It was called Superfly 3. It was televised on HBO. You had, like, pretty much a super flyweight triple header of sorts on HBO, although they had, like, a couple of other super flyweight matchups on the card. But you did have Kazuto Ioka versus McWilliams Arroyo in one fight, Donny Nietes against Aston Fliste for the vacant WBO super flyweight title, and Juan Francisco Estrada against Felipe Orosuta there at super flyweight. So, breaking it down here real quick, you had, of course, McWilliams Arroyo, who, did beat Carlos Quadras in February of this year, after, being out of the ring for about a couple years to his loss with Chocolatito Gonzalez. He, did get that win after that and then came up against Kazuto Ioka from Tokyo, Japan, one of the guys there that fights out of Osaka or Kyoto, and holds the WBA flyweight championship. So he stepped up to the super flyweight division to face McWilliams Arroyo, and he ended up pulling off the unanimous decision victory over Arroyo to move to 23 wins with just one loss right there. So I'm trying to see if it have you know, start off with Matt. If you could break that one down for us.
Honestly, the card wasn't that interesting. What was interesting was that Donnie Nietes got absolutely robbed by the referees. There is no way that that fight was a draw. I had the fight 118 to 110. The fight wasn't close, so I don't know what the hell the judges were looking at, but I think it's a shame that Nietes wasn't able to become a four-division champion. As for the other fights, McWilliams Arroyo, you know, he's never really been that good. I think that his victory over Quadras is probably due to Quadras, you know, maybe dipping into the recreational drugs a bit too much. So who knows what kind of mental condition he was in, you know. So he got lucky with that. His luck ran out. It is what it is. As for the main event, I wasn't very impressed with Juan Estrada. I thought that he was much too hittable. I think that these guys should be thanking their lucky stars that the monster moved up to fight in the WBSS, because he would slaughter all of those guys that you saw on the card yesterday. And honestly, I think I would take Saul Rungvisai over all these guys too. Even though I've never been too enamored with him either, I think he beat him. You know, Estrada gets hit way too much. If he gets touched by somebody with power, it's good night, sweet prince. So that's all I really have for the card. It was a boring card. It was really a nothing card. HBO, where are you, HBO? We miss you, HBO. You know, in the words of your man, Jay Cotto, come back to boxing, HBO. Come back to boxing. We need you, HBO. I don't know what's going on with them, man. That's all I really have on that.
Yeah. Well, see, with me and Stefan there over at the Barclays Center, we weren't able to catch this particular card, and not sure if Terrell was able to as well. Were you able to see anything on HBO yesterday?
No, I didn't catch them. I had to catch up this week on those fights and everything, you know.
Gotcha. So on that note of what Brother Matt said on Come Back to HBO, we have their attempt to see if they can come back on September 15th. As we're going to have the rematch for the middleweight championships, as Saul Canelo Alvarez takes on Gennady Golovkin for the IBO, the WBA Super, and the WBC middleweight championships. Of course, you know, with Alvarez having this whole thing with Clem Buterol and Gennady Golovkin getting all in a hissy fit about it and whatnot. And then he says he's going to break down Canelo, and Canelo says he's going to knock Golovkin out. I just see it as it's going to be more of a tactical battle. I think someone is going to get boxed. I'm not going to say who, but I just put in the key term, box, right? So that's what I have as far as, like, my quote-unquote short preview of that particular fight. I want to start with Terrell, and then with Stefan, and then go with Matt. So, Terrell, what is your outlook for this fight?
Yeah, just real quick, what's interesting on this fight is the more fast talking between the two sides at this point for the rematch. The first fight was kind of, in a sense, respectable in the lead up. We know, of course, in the aftermath of that, was revealed that Canelo tested positive for clenbuterol. got suspended for 6 months, dating back to the date of the test, things like that. From that point, even what was covered in the ACO 24/7 series, Glove himself said he doesn't hate him, but damn, they're close to it, right? And now you got both sides saying they want to punish each other. Canelo saying he wants to knock Triple G out. So with these war words, you want to walk into this fight expecting action, no holding back, rocking type, soccer type stuff. But some of the stuff that we already know from the first fight, we never did see Canelo necessarily hurt Triple G. He stunned him out a few times within the fight, but he didn't flat out hurt him, things like that. Going back with Triple G going back to Canelo, he wasn't necessarily hurt at all, you know, where he stunned and had to have a hold on, things like that. So now we have a real interesting world where from the promotions that keep in mind that at 4 points, we didn't think this the rematch was going to happen, because at this point, Canelo's like, I don't need you, and in truth, he doesn't need him, because Canelo he can sell fights on his own without Triple G. It's Triple G that actually needs Canelo. But in the rematch, I hope that what the world words are suggesting, I want to knock somebody out, so I want to see somebody go in there and go for it. But in consideration of those words, will that actually happen? It remains to be seen. But at the same time, what you already know, both guys at this point know each other's power at this point. So you know how much of a risk that you can take. So if Canelo's words are true that he's going to knock him out, that means that he didn't care about Triple G's power from the first fight, that he knows he can take a risk without necessarily getting hurt. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens from both sides. I just hope we get an all-action fight.
All right, thanks there, Brother Terrell. Now we're going to go over to Stephon.
Well, on that fight, I like Triple G, but they're going to give it to Alvarez. Why? Because he still got some of them.
Come on.
Hold on. Can I get a opinion? Hold on. Hey, I don't say no when you say nothing. Hey, come on. Hold on. Why he win though? Hold on, you said you had Danny Garcia, didn't he lose?
Yeah, so, Danny Garcia lost, but I'm not saying that they're gonna give it to him if he doesn't deserve the win. You're trying to discredit Canelo already before the fight even takes place.
No. Let me tell you something. Didn't they say they had steroid in the meat he was eating? He was getting big and cut up quick. Some of that stuff still was in his system. It's out now, but he looked good. And of course he's going to beat this man now. Yeah, watch him beat him. He's going to beat Triple G. He's going to beat him. Watch. Guarantee that. But that's my opinion on that. I don't got too much take on that fight, you know. But what you think?
Oh, Matt, hey, man, what you got?
What you think? He ain't saying nothing. I want to listen to this.
It's my turn. I just don't like this. They're going to give it to someone. Canelo, if he's going to win, is going to earn the victory. I'm going to hear nothing.
You're breaking up. Hello?
Yeah, I ain't get much of that.
Burned in yep. The ring.
All right.
Yeah. He went in and out, but I guess that's what's going to happen. He's going to go in and out and go to sleep.
Nah, man.
But anyway, hey, y'all. Hey, Junior, I got to go.
Yeah.
Let me know when you do another podcast, everything, and I'm going to hop on holler at y'all.
All right, no doubt, man. I'm here every Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, brother.
Okay, man. It was nice talking to y'all guys, man. What's the other brother's name that said that?
Matt.
Man, I like him. I like him. Now I'm in Barry White. Nah, man. smooth boxing analysis voice. No, man, it ain't like this, man. I like it. Anyway, man, it was nice talking to y'all guys, man. Y'all stay encouraged, man. Keep God first. Everything will follow.
All right, y'all.
All right. Peace, my brother. Yeah. Let's see if we can, have Matt. Matt, you could pitch in. See if you can pitch in what you were going to be saying about this fight.
Now, we all know what happened with the last fight. Some people had Golovkin winning. Personally, I had Canelo winning 7-5. The problem with the last fight was Adelaide Bird's 118-110 score. That score, to me, robbed Canelo of the credit that he richly deserved for outboxing Golovkin over 12 rounds. Okay, because that score made people think that, oh, this is corrupt. Canelo cheated. It's rigged. Canelo shouldn't have won. No. Canelo won that fight. Okay, he outboxed Golovkin over 12 rounds. And you know what? All this Mexican-style crap that you've been hearing about, oh, I'm going to come right there, I'm going to knock him out. Yeah, you know what, Triple G? That works when you're fighting Vardis Martirosyan, okay? But that doesn't work when you're fighting Danny Jacobs. That didn't work when you're fighting David Lemieux. That didn't work when you're fighting Canelo. You had a healthy respect for these boys' power, so you had to try to find a way to get your stuff off. If you look at what Canelo did to Golovkin in the first fight, Canelo worked him over to the body, and you notice Golovkin wasn't as aggressive as he normally is in the first few rounds of the fight. And I think that's something that Canelo is going to take advantage of, because Golovkin, I think he's smelling his own shit right now. He's believing his own hype. He thinks that he's just going to come in there and he's going to run over Canelo. And I'm here to tell you guys, Canelo is going to put the paws on this man, okay? Canelo is going to box this guy's head off, and I think Canelo is going to stop him late. I think Canelo has no respect for Golovkin as a man, the fighter. He has no respect for him, and he shouldn't have any respect for him, because Canelo is the better boxer, and because of Adelaide Bird's poor scorecard, he was robbed of the credit that he deserved. You know, Abel Sanchez, or as the great JR calls him, Fable Sanchez, this guy has been running off at the mouth, writing checks that his fighter won't be able to cash. He complained about the hand wraps. You see that circulating on social media. Oh, the hand wraps were illegal. No, they weren't. Okay, the hand wraps were legal in Nevada, which is where they were fighting at. If you don't know the rules of the jurisdiction that you're fighting in, then shut the fuck up and let someone who knows the rules fight for you. You don't know the rules? So shut up, Abel Sanchez. There was nothing wrong with the rap. He's just looking for every single excuse as to why Mexican style was nowhere to be found with his fighter. And he can fight Mexican style this time, but Mexican style is going to get him knocked out. Because Canelo he's ready. He's already at 163. He's not going to have any problems with the weight cut. He's going to be prime. He's going to be ready. His knee is healed up, because his knee was a problem in the last fight. That's why he had the surgery. That's why he got that knee cleaned up. His knee is healed up. He's nice and trim. He's not bulky like in the last fight. And I think he is going to put on the boxing performance of his life. And he is going to come away with the much-deserved victory. And all those doubts that everyone had after the first fight are going to be silenced.
Well, I mean, there you have it there from Brother Matt, reference to this Canelo Golovkin 2 fight. As for me, I have my overall feelings about Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin pretty much together, and that, you know, when this fight was basically talked about in the first fight, I was like, oh boy, here we go. This is their HBO's, you know, feeble attempt of trying to make a big money fight. And they won't do anything in order to try to jeopardize that. And so, you know, what they did leading up to the fight, you had that, you know, thing there with Canelo and Little Chavez, where Canelo basically, you know, blew by Little Chavez. And then, you know, you have of course, Golovkin against Jacobs in March of that year. And Jacobs outboxed him, straight up outboxed him. He gave the performance of his life and outboxed Gennady Golovkin, and the judges took it away from him. Just so they considered that fight between Canelo and Golovkin last year. And, I mean, to me, I mean, you saw in the first few rounds of that fight, Canelo was the one that showed that he was the better boxer. He was the one with the better timing, was able to, you know, throw off what Golovkin was thinking about doing. And so that's where he was able to get the advantage in the first few moments of the fight. But after that, he kind of like tired down a little bit, which, you know, he had Golovkin have a better shot to get back into the fight. And then he eventually caught up to the fight. But, you know, with that, you had the draw and the whole thing with Adelaide Bird and whatever it is. But for me, I just think that, you know, this fight between these two is basically what it is. It's their pinnacle, so they're going to try to stretch it out as much as they can, and they won't really fight many other people other than that. With Golovkin, if he ends up becoming the victor and they don't have a rematch, then he's going to go after the WBO champion, and that's it for Canelo. He may, you know, like I said, go for one rematch and then have, like, one other fight there in the middleweight division. And then probably, if he might just move up to super middleweight, if y'all ain't careful, because I don't see him waiting for the guy there at super welterweight, Jaime Munguia, to come up to the middleweight division. So that's why I, like, kind of don't really get all too excited about this fight, because both of these fighters I'm not really excited for. So it is what it is. I don't like Golovkin, but it's not like I really like Canelo. So that's why I'm like, meh, in reference to this particular fight. So that's pretty much my story on that there. Anyone got any response to it?
Very no, I mean, interesting take, man. Now you go ahead, Terrell.
Yeah, just real quick, just kind of like I said, even if Triple G was to win this fight, what's next for him? Like I said, a possible match with Billy Saunders, something like that, because you already know that given Triple G's resume already that he already has in front of him, he's not going to face Charlo. He's not gonna fight Jacobs again. So, and that point, because we know that Triple G is looking for big paydays right now. So, you're not gonna walk into a fight with little reward and high risk. So, like, outside of fighting Billy Joe Saunders, he has what he has in front of him right now, Canelo. So that's what he wants. In terms of Canelo, if he was to win this rematch, what's next for him? So I would absolutely laugh if Canelo wins this fight and then drops back down to 154. I would not be surprised to see that. So it's funny on what would happen for either if either guy wins. Pretty funny.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting take that you had, JR. I think if Golovkin was to win, what would be next for him is probably just and nobody of any real note. You know, because who is there for him? Andrade is now with Eddie Hearn in the zone. So HBO's not going to give up Golovkin to fight on the zone. Billy Joe Saunders is with Frank Warren. So that could be a possibility, but we've been down this road two times already with these two guys. The first time it was Billy Joe that pulled out. The second time it was Golovkin that pulled out. So I don't even think we're going to go down that road again. Who else is at 160? You got Danny Jacobs, who is technically an HBO fighter, but is Danny Jacobs going to beat Sergey Derevyanchenko? I don't think so. You know, Derevyanchenko is much bigger than Danny Jacobs. Yeah, I'm thinking Derevyanchenko is going to beat him. Okay. Now I need to look at a little bit more recent matches with them. But being there in person with the two of them, the Revyachenko is a lot thicker than Danny Jacobs. He seems to be bigger and he seems to be more focused than Danny Jacobs. Danny Jacobs, I'm not saying he's looking past the Revyachenko, but I'm saying he's looking past the Revyachenko. He was talking about rematching with Golovkin, possibly fighting Canelo. And the Revyachenko, even if you talk to him about another fighter, no. I want to talk about Danny Jacobs. This is the fight. This is my dream. He's the hungrier fighter, and I think he's going to come away with the victory. And we already saw Golovkin didn't want to fight him. So who is Golovkin going to fight, man? He's going to probably fight another blown-up 154-pound fighter like he's been doing, and that's going to be his swan song, okay? That's it. I've never been impressed with Golovkin. I think Golovkin just picks his battles, and he's just the product of a very, very good marketing machine. But all that's been exposed, and it's going to get exposed on Saturday, and I can't wait.
Gotcha. So, I mean, that's the whole thing there with this particular fight between those two. So not really seeing that much come out of that. As far as, like, the overall outcome and the aftermath to that. So is there anything else to look out for in the undercard, like the Lemieux versus O'Sullivan fight, or, you know, Chocolatito supposedly being part of the card? Anything else?
For me, the undercard is okay. You know, O'Sullivan versus Lemieux is going to be bombed away. That's great. Forget all that. We need to be talking about the ESPN fight on Friday between Jose Ramirez and Antonio Orozco. I think that is going to be a much better fight than people think. I think Orozco has a very good chance at beating Jose Ramirez, and I think that we are going to see a war between these two guys, and it's probably going to be the best fight of the weekend, to be honest with you.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is. My thing with Jose Carlos Ramirez is that, I mean, he's had, you know, a couple of, you know, KOs. He was able to catch Mike Reed last year before getting the decision win over Miramam earlier this year. But I think that, you know, there's a little bit of shock going into Roscoe's side in reference to this particular fight. That's going to be at the State Mart Arena there in Fresno, California. So, yeah, I'm going to be on the lookout for that particular fight there that's going to be on ESPN for those that are, you know, going to be on the lookout for that particular fight. That's pretty much, you know, what I had there so far, guys. If there's anything else, you know, go ahead and, you know, pitch in or whatever.
Yeah, real quick, one thing I'm looking forward to for next weekend on the undercard of the Triple E fight is Muniga. And just want to see how he progresses. He's playing a guy, I think, Brian Cook, I think the kid's name is, out of Canada. Of note, that kid's like 30, 32 years old, something like that. So, and we know Muniga still comes in at 21 years old. We last saw him a few months ago against, Ishii Smith, I believe it was, from England. And we saw that McGill was forced to go a full fight. And even though Smith was take a lot of power. Yeah, there you go. And so I'm just very interested to see how McGill progresses. But now he's fighting a guy that is called a grown man, right? So, and you fight sometimes the age comes to play. Sometimes you can see that speak about on a young kid or whatever. Despite the fact he may have cheated a belt, but I'm very interested to see how he progresses. So one thing I'm looking forward to next weekend.
Gotcha. Well, said, it's going to be another busy weekend of, you know, fights out there for people to catch and watch. So that's the thing there, man. And I'll be looking forward to it. I'm sure that y'all will be too. And then we'll be able to summarize all of it in the next episode of the Bison Source radio show that is coming up on the 16th. I'm sure that you'll be able to catch that. Catch the sister shows, the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, here on the Blog Talk Radio, Cold Hard Truth on Sports, Tuesday nights. And you have Take This L on Wednesday nights on Blog Talk Radio. And this particular show, this episode, will be available on Anchor FM and other podcast programs and apps. So you can catch it on demand at any time there. But that concludes this episode of the Bison Source Radio Show. And like I say, at the end of every show, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit. Not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, everybody.
Later.